In the Caribbean, animals have never just been food. They've been omens, protectors, currency, and companions stitched into folklore, religion, and daily survival. The goat was once a walking pantry and a spiritual sacrifice. The chicken, a messenger between worlds. The ground dove, a silent witness to the dead. Long before refrigeration or antibiotics, our ancestors raised livestock with observation, ritual, and deep ancestral wisdom. They didn't just farm animals, they interpreted them. They believed some creatures shouldn't be caged and others shouldn't be raised at all, lest they bring ruin. You won't find this in textbooks, but ask any old-timer and they'll tell you which animals cry before hurricanes and which ones never cross certain yard lines. This episode dives deep into the living traditions, spiritual taboos, and sustainable practices our Caribbean elders used to manage animals. From handmade goat pens to rooster omens, it's not just history, it's survival knowledge passed down through generations. You'll learn not just how they did it, but why. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Sacred Yard, Animals, Ancestors, and the Caribbean Way. To understand how animals were raised in the Caribbean before electricity, refrigeration, or commercial feed, you have to look at the yard, not just as a place, but as a living map of survival, spirit, and season. A traditional Caribbean yard wasn't a backyard the way modern people think of it. It was a rotating ecosystem, often unfenced, with packed earth, small trees for shade, and multiple zones, one for chickens, one for goats, maybe a pig pen near the back, and always space for whatever came and went, like ground doves, stray cats, or wandering dogs. It was common for children, elders, animals, and spirits to share that same yard space, coexisting in a rhythm shaped by necessity and belief. The goat as provider and spirit messenger. The goat was more than meat. In most islands, Jamaica, Dominica, Haiti, Grenada, the goat served multiple roles. It was protein, yes, but it was also a dowry, a sign of status, and occasionally a spiritual offering. In some Afro-Caribbean traditions like Santeria or Vodou, a goat may be sacrificed with ritual care, its blood offered during ceremonies meant to heal, protect, or purge. But outside the spiritual, goats were selected with precise wisdom. You didn't just pick any goat. An elder would watch a kid's gait, how it walked, how it held its head, whether it avoided certain plants, to know if it would grow sturdy. Goats that sneezed too often were considered weak. Ones that cried at night without reason. Some believed they were signaling spiritual unrest in the household. They were kept tethered near fruit trees or shaded corners, using ropes made of braided sisal or coconut coir. Pens were simple, cut bamboo tied with vines or salvaged wood posts sunk into the dirt. Goats were rotated regularly, not just to prevent overgrazing, but to let the soil cool. Elders would say the earth needs rest just like the animal. And one thing was clear, never beat a goat. Not only because it was cruel, but because in folk belief, hurting a goat brought bad luck, often in the form of sickness or crop failure. The goat was to be respected, even when it had to be slaughtered. Fowl as forecasters and watchers. Chickens were treated as more than egg layers. The rooster, especially, held symbolic weight. A crowing rooster at odd hours, particularly between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., was said to be warning of death in the village or unrest among ancestors. In many homes, that rooster wasn't chased away, it was watched. Younger generations might call this superstition, but old Caribbean families believed in signs. If your hen laid outside the coop for 3 days in a row, it meant someone in the home was hiding something. If a brood refused to eat a particular patch of yard grain, it was believed that someone had set something, a spiritual trap or curse. Coops were rarely elaborate. A raised wooden box with open slats and a hinged door, sometimes with charcoal or lime scattered underneath to absorb moisture and deter ants or parasites. Birds were let out in the morning, called back at dusk with sounds or grain tossed onto a worn patch of earth. No chicken wire, no automatic feeder, just observation. Birds were selectively culled, always the sick first, but also hens who became aggressive toward chicks or stopped laying without cause. It was said that keeping a non-productive hen around for too long invites drought, not just in eggs, but in luck and health. Every child in a homesteading household learned the chicken hierarchy. Who was brooding? Who was molting? Who had laid where? This wasn't just animal care. It was an early lesson in systems, patience, and attention to the natural world. Ground doves, sacred and untouched. Few birds inspired as much mystery as the ground dove, known by many names, Balandra, in some islands, mourning dove, elsewhere. They weren't farmed, but their presence was considered spiritual. If a dove built a nest near your home, it meant protection. If one was killed, accidentally or otherwise, it was seen as a bad omen. No one kept ground doves in cages. They were considered messengers, often associated with ancestors or spiritual visitors. In some homes, you'd see elders leaving bits of rice or crumbs in quiet corners of the yard, not to feed chickens, but for the doves. Their cooing at dawn was seen as a form of blessing. Silence, on the other hand, especially from an area that usually hosted them, was a warning. Old-timers would mutter under their breath, "The spirits move different today," and keep children indoors. This reverence influenced how people treated all small birds, even pigeons. Killing birds that visited uninvited was taboo, not out of ecological awareness, but spiritual respect. The land was not just yours. It was borrowed. Dogs as guardians and spirit talkers. Dogs weren't pets, they were workers. Usually lean, short-haired mongrels adapted to the heat. Dogs were trained more by tone and pattern than leashes or commands. They were fed leftovers, guarded the yard, and often warned of spirit activity. It wasn't uncommon to hear someone say, "The dog barking, but ain't nobody there." This wasn't dismissed as nonsense, it was interpreted, especially if the dog stood frozen, staring into an empty corner or backing away from the yard gate at night. Elders would light bush incense, say a few prayers, or sprinkle salt at the doorway. Dogs were rarely chained unless they were aggressive, and even then, it was with caution. A chained dog who howled at night without provocation was believed to be seeing death. In rural areas, a dog scratching at the floor or digging at a house corner was a signal to check the foundation, not just for termites, but for buried oba work, spiritual traps or curses placed in the soil. Despite all this, they were loved, not cuddled like modern pets, but included, spoken to, warned, thanked. If a dog protected a family from an intruder or snake, it was often given a piece of meat or bone in ceremony. Some elders even whispered thanks at its ear. "You keep watch, me friend." What was never kept? Just as important as what animals were raised was what wasn't. Parrots, for example, were almost never kept in cages in traditional rural homes. While some townhomes might have done so for show, in villages, parrots were seen as too intelligent and too spiritual to be caged. Their mimicry was believed to invite energy into the home. If the wrong thing was said in earshot, the parrot might repeat it at the wrong time, stirring up unrest or calling things that shouldn't be called. Monkeys were taboo on many islands. Even if one escaped from a ship or was brought in by traders, people were wary. Monkeys were said to be too close to human behavior, too mischievous, too knowing. Raising one was thought to invite confusion, theft, or madness into the household. Cats were a mixed subject. Some households embraced them for rat control. Others feared them, especially black ones, associating them with spirits or duppies. It depended on the elder. One woman might keep 3 cats and thank them nightly. Her neighbor might chase one with a broom if it crossed the yard after dark. The point was always the same: respect what you don't understand. Tools, time, and the art of watching. Traditional animal husbandry in the Caribbean wasn't based on gear. There were no thermometers for sick animals, no ultrasounds for pregnancy, no weighing scales. Instead, there was time. Time spent watching. An elder would sit on the back step or a cracked stool under a mango tree and simply observe. The way a hen fluffed her feathers. The direction a goat faced when eating. Whether a dog was eating slower than usual. That was the diagnostic system. Careful, consistent, intuitive. Feeding tools were repurposed items. Coconut husks used as scoops. Old metal pots for water, hollowed bamboo as troughs. There was no concept of waste because everything could be repurposed into animal care or compost. Salt, charcoal, garlic, and bitter bush were the 4 basic medicines. A sick goat might be rubbed with bush tea or given water laced with powdered charcoal. A weak chick might be cradled near fire warmth and dabbed with garlic water. And still, even with limited tools, survival was high. Why? Because care wasn't reactive. It was proactive, rooted in rhythm and respect. You learned the animal's language before the problem arrived. Chapter 2. Pins, Posts, and the Power of Ritual: How Traditional Animal Keeping Worked Without Modern Tools. If Chapter 1 revealed how animals were understood in spirit and sign, Chapter 2 explores how they were actually managed, without plastic feed buckets, chain-link fences, or store-bought supplements. What we find is an economy of purpose and resourcefulness, where everything had a second life, and every task held a rhythm shaped by season, moon, and myth. Goat pens built from the earth for the earth. In the days before lumber yards and hardware stores, goat pens were crafted from what the land gave freely. Bamboo, wild tamarind, coconut branches, and sea grape limbs were common materials. Nails were rare and treasured, so most structures were bound using twisted vines, bush rope, or strips of bark. A pen was rarely just a pen. It was part shelter, part symbol. Many older heads refused to place a goat pen directly in front of the house, saying it brought spiritual confusion or drew heavy spirits into the yard. Instead, pens were tucked into corners shaded by almond trees or placed facing the rising sun, believed to keep the animals more fertile and the milk sweeter. Elevation was key. Goats don't do well with soggy ground, so pens were often raised slightly on rocks or sloped land. Some elders would scatter dry ash underneath, wood ash, especially from cooking fires, as a natural deodorizer and tick repellent. Charcoal was ground and sprinkled at pen entrances as both a disinfectant and, some would whisper, a ward against bad spirits. Roofing was made from banana leaves or dried thatch, slanted, always, so rain would run off easily. And when a pen was taken down or rebuilt, the wood was never simply thrown away. It was either burned to bless the soil or repurposed for fences, firewood, or support poles for vines. Everything was used. Nothing was wasted. Pig keeping, caution, containment, and cultural boundaries. Keeping pigs was considered a serious responsibility and one not taken lightly in traditional Caribbean homes. Pigs were strong, fast-growing, and potentially dangerous if not handled right. But more than that, they carried cultural weight. In many Afro-Caribbean traditions, Pigs were taboo during certain seasons or rituals. A pregnant woman was sometimes warned not to go near a pig pen, lest the animal draw out her strength. Some elders swore that pigs could see spirits and would scream wildly at dusk if death passed by the yard. Because pigs can root and destroy quickly, pens had to be strong. Posts were driven deep into the ground with hand tools made from metal scraps or stone. Walls were reinforced with woven palm fronds or old zinc sheets. Pens were often semi-open, enclosed on three sides, open at the front, so the animals could be observed easily without entering their space. Feeding was a communal affair. Scraps from the entire house went into the pig's trough. Boiled green banana peels, stale bread, chopped callaloo stems, fish heads, nothing raw. Food was always cooked down first, not just for safety, but because it was believed to calm the pig's spirit. Some homes marked the pig pen with white chalk or charcoal crosses. Others avoided building near water tanks or wells, fearing contamination, not just of water, but of energy. And if a pig suddenly refused to eat or began digging frantically, it was seen as a sign to cleanse the yard or seek a spiritual reading. Fencing without fences, the art of roping and ranging. One of the most remarkable traditions across the Caribbean was raising livestock without fencing them in. Goats, cows, and even donkeys were often tethered using long ropes tied to nearby trees or staked poles. But the rope length was adjusted daily, allowing the animal to graze in a new arc without trampling previous ground. This system required precision. You had to know where the best grass was, where snakes might hide, how the sun moved across the day, and whether a dog or mongoose was roaming nearby. It meant waking early, moving the rope, checking for tangles, and knowing when an animal looked too still or too wild-eyed. Knots were taught early in life. Children learned how to tie the figure eight or double loop using sisal rope their grandmother had spun from plant fibers. Metal chains were considered too harsh and damaging. The rope had to be firm, but soft enough to avoid cutting into skin. And perhaps the most telling sign of this roping culture, trust. Most animals were trained through repetition, not restraint. You could find an old man in Dominica who would let his goat walk untethered beside him on a narrow path. No leash, no stick, just voice commands and rhythm. Up now, left, wait. It wasn't magic. It was time. It was trust. Spiritual cleansing in the animal yard. Every few months, especially after a sickness or death in the family, the animal yard underwent spiritual cleansing. This might involve sweeping the yard in a specific pattern, usually east to west, followed by sprinkling salt water or bush tea, like lemongrass or vervain, along animal paths. Smoke was important. A small coal pot would be used to burn incense or dried herbs, sometimes even sprinkling white rum or sugarcane alcohol into the flames. Goats were walked through this smoke slowly. Chickens were encouraged to dust bathe in the cleared patch. Dogs were spoken to gently, led around the yard perimeter, and offered water blessed with silent prayer. Why? Because animals weren't just physical beings. They were thought to absorb energy, good and bad. If a household had experienced hardship or spiritual attack, called obeah in many islands, the animals would often show symptoms first, a sudden refusal to eat, droopy ears, listlessness, or even strange vocalizations at night. Elders knew to watch for these signs, not just medicate them. And if an animal died during this period, it was never eaten. It was burned or buried deep, with a coin placed in the grave to pay for its crossing. These weren't just superstitions. They were protocols based on generations of observation, pain, and survival. Herbal treatments and intuitive medicine. Without veterinarians or feed stores, the Caribbean homesteader relied on a rich pharmacopoeia of bush medicine for animals. A goat with bloating? Give a tea of bitter bush and warm water. Chickens with mites? Rub their legs with wood ash and sulfur. Pig with worms? Ground pumpkin seeds mixed into the mash. Dog with fever? A mix of Saracee tea and charcoal water. Dosage was always intuitive, based on size, age, and severity. No one measured with teaspoons. They measured with eyes, hands, and memory. Some elders whispered to the animal as they administered treatment, "Drink, drink now, let it leave you." Not because they thought the animal understood the words, but because healing was seen as a dialogue. You had to treat the spirit and the body together. Herbs were gathered before sunrise, during specific moon phases. Many believed that picking under a full moon made the medicine stronger. Others insisted on silence while harvesting. Even children were shushed. This care system was not quick, but it was effective. And more importantly, it was sustainable. No chemicals, no dependence on outside supply chains, just the land and the wisdom to use it well. Slaughter, respect, and the ritual of ending. Killing an animal wasn't done lightly in traditional homesteads. It was scheduled, blessed, and performed with a mix of precision and reverence. For goats, the animal was often spoken to in a low voice before the cut. Some households would feed the animal its favorite treat that morning, breadfruit skin, mashed banana, as a form of honoring. Children were usually kept away unless they were old enough to understand what was happening. A shallow pit was sometimes dug nearby to receive the blood, especially if it was raining. Blood was seen as powerful. Letting it soak into dry earth without intention was frowned upon. With pigs, the process was loud, messy, and communal. Neighbors were called. Boiling water was prepared. Scrapers were sharpened. After the kill, the meat was divided with care, and bones were sometimes saved to be boiled for broth or buried under fruit trees to feed the root. Nothing was wasted. Not just out of scarcity, but out of principle. The tail might become a brush, the hooves saved for soup. Even the stomach lining was cleaned meticulously for special dishes. These weren't just traditions. They were lessons in humility, in respecting the life that gave you life. And always, the animal was thanked. Not always out loud. Sometimes with a whisper, sometimes with a glance, sometimes just with silence, as the sun went down and the smoke from the fire curled upward into the evening sky. Chapter 3. What to keep, what to release, animal taboos, elders' warnings, and the future of Caribbean livestock wisdom. By now, it's clear, raising animals in the Caribbean wasn't just about food. It was a relationship, one governed by respect, ritual, and generations of whispered wisdom. In this final chapter, we look at the deeper teachings that told people what to raise, what to avoid, and why some animals were never meant to be kept, because they were seen not just as flesh and bone, but as spiritual forces, ancestral links, or walking messengers. We'll also explore what it means to bring this old wisdom forward into modern times, and why ignoring it might cost us more than we think. Animal taboos, lessons from what was forbidden. Elders across the Caribbean had firm opinions about certain animals, and they weren't based on economics, but energy. Some animals were said to carry dark luck. Others were believed to attract duppies, ghosts, or suck away household prosperity. These weren't old wives' tales to be laughed off. They were codes, behavioral maps, and breaking them often brought real consequences, whether through sudden sickness, bad dreams, or disrupted home life. Let's look at a few. Owls were feared in many island cultures. If one perched near your home, especially hooting at night, it was believed to be either an omen of death or a spirit in disguise. No one would dare trap one, much less raise one. Children were taught early, if you hear an owl, stay quiet and cover your head. Snakes, too, were a complex symbol. Some bushmen swore that certain snakes were watchers, silent observers from the ancestral realm. Killing one carelessly could bring misfortune. You never kept a snake even in a cage, not because of fear, but because of disrespect. It was seen as trying to imprison something sacred. Even rabbits were avoided in some areas. While they were commonly raised for meat in other parts of the world, in several Caribbean islands, especially rural communities with strong African or indigenous lineage, they were believed to carry hidden double spirits. It was said that a rabbit could see what's not meant to be seen and pass that into your home through dreams. What's important here is not whether these beliefs are true by Western logic. What matters is that they formed a system of checks, boundaries that ensured people didn't overstep what they didn't understand. And in doing so, these taboos protected more than just people. They protected ecosystems. Mixed farming, harmony, or chaos. Today, people often mix animals freely. Goats with chickens, pigs with ducks, cows near compost pits. But the old ways didn't always allow this. Elders were selective. Some believed goats and pigs should not share a space. Them spirit don't align, they'd say. It might sound like superstition, but modern studies now show that animal stress can increase when incompatible species are confined together, especially in tight spaces. Chickens were often kept apart from dogs, not because of obvious predation issues, but because dogs were seen as territorial. A dog raised too close to fowl might become restless, overly alert, or aggressive in ways that disrupted the energy of the entire yard. Some households never allowed cats and birds together at all, even if the cat was docile. Why? Because the cat, in old folklore, represented the unseen, stealth, mystery, and in some beliefs, the underworld. To keep it too close to birds, symbols of the soul, lightness, and ancestral messages, was considered a clash. In modern terms, we might say animal psychology and ethology. But to our ancestors, it was simpler. Observe what causes unrest and separate it. Farming wasn't about maximizing every inch of space. It was about coexistence. The night watch, when the yard spoke first. Every Caribbean homesteader who raised animals knew this. The animals often knew before you did. Before a storm, goats would bleat restlessly and refuse to sleep in their usual corners. Chickens would climb higher than normal to roost, even in daylight. Dogs would pace the edge of the yard with low growls, sniffing the air. And when death approached, whether it was a sick family member or an accident in the village, there were signs. A rooster that crowed three times at dusk and then fell silent. A ground dove that refused to fly away. A dog that whimpered without injury, digging holes in dry soil. These weren't accidents. The animals were in tune. Elders used to say, "The yard don't lie." And in that belief, every bark, cluck, and whinny became a language worth translating. That's why animal care wasn't just feeding and cleaning. It was listening. It was common to see older folks sitting silently on their veranda, straw hat low, pipe in hand, watching the yard for hours. Not out of idleness, but out of duty. To notice what had changed, what was missing, what felt off. And when something wasn't right, it was rarely ignored. Even if the animal seemed healthy, a strange pattern, like a goat refusing to eat under a certain tree, might lead to a yard cleansing, a spiritual reading, or even a shift in sleeping arrangements. This wasn't paranoia. It was pattern literacy. Spiritual gifts, animals as healers and carriers. In many rural Caribbean homes, animals weren't just raised, they were offered. A goat might be slaughtered, not for food, but to remove a curse. A hen's feathers might be burned in a pot with herbs to clear illness. A dove might be released as part of a funeral ritual, its flight symbolizing the soul's return to the ancestors. This wasn't limited to Afro-Caribbean religious traditions like voodoo, Santeria, or revivalism. Even Christian households often blended ritual care with prayer and offering. A pig that saved a child from a snake bite might be marked with oil and blessed. A rooster that had survived 3 fights might be declared guard of the yard and fed by hand. Animals were seen as conduits of energy, protection, even forgiveness. Their behaviors could cleanse a home or pollute it, which is why their treatment mattered, not just ethically, but spiritually. A man who mistreated his animals was believed to be inviting judgment. A woman who fed her dog before herself was seen as someone who understood order. Putting life first. It wasn't about sentimentality. It was about reciprocity. Modern lessons from old wisdom. So where does this leave us today? In an era of digital timers, electric fences, pelletized feed, and genetically optimized poultry, does any of this still matter? Yes, because beneath the rituals and taboos lies a set of fundamental truths. Animals are teachers. Their behavior reveals what's happening around us, often before we notice. Energy matters. Peace in the animal yard reflects peace in the home. Observation is medicine. If you watch long enough, the problem often reveals itself before it becomes unmanageable. Sustainability is ancient. Before eco-farming became a movement, it was the Caribbean default. Use what you have, honor the cycle, waste nothing. Bringing this forward doesn't mean rejecting modern tools. It means integrating them, using science and tradition side by side. We can test soil while still planting by moon phase. We can use vaccines while still offering herbal teas. We can track animal growth while still respecting spiritual rhythms. It's not either or, it's both and. And in a world unraveling from disconnection, from land, from animal, from self, these old Caribbean animal traditions remind us of what's possible when we listen, observe, and respect the creatures we claim to raise. Because in truth, they often raise us.